good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sickler. With me is Benjamin Solak on a Tuesday edition of the podcast. No, wait, it's a Wednesday edition of the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe learn something.
Dude, I am just all over the place today. I can't keep track of it. Somehow, some way, I have less of an idea of what day it is after the draft than before the draft. I feel like I was pretty spot on before the draft.
No, because before the draft, you're like, all right, and then like on Sunday, I fly out, and then that means on Wednesday, we have to do this, and I had that radio hit on Tuesday, and you're constantly like reorienting yourself relative to when you think things are happening or going to happen or whatever.
It's true.
Versus now post-draft where I'm like, there's no time. There's no, nothing is scheduled. Nothing is real. And we all just are existing on a slow moving plane. It's a rock in space, brother.
Is it still delicious? Is the schedule still delicious?
Oh, the schedule's more delicious, certainly.
We're going to be talking about draft classes that we were not fans of today. Yesterday, we talked about our favorite draft classes, mentioned about 10 that we thought really hit it out of the park. This one, we're going to go over a handful. I don't think we're going to get to 10 because I didn't hate 10 draft classes, but there's a couple I want to bring to the table, a couple that Ben wants to bring to the table that we're just going to sit here and basically talk about how we don't understand how this team got to the draft class, whether it was their evaluation of prospects, their evaluation of positions. However they went about it, we just weren't fans of the process. Ben, I will let you begin. Which team do you want to start talking about first when it comes to what in the world did they just do this past weekend?
The absolute worst draft belongs to the Houston Texans, which I feel like I've talked about Houston 10,000 times on every single radio hit, including a radio hit in Houston, by the way, which I did not know it was Houston until like, I logged on and they were like, you gave our Texans an F. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, I was just about to ask if you gave him a straight F. I didn't give any F's this year, but
I make it a point to give out like actual even grades. Like my most frequently given out grade was a B minus, which is like, you know, average-ish, right? Like I gave out a lot of B's and B minuses. I gave Houston an F.
I have a question. Can I ask you a question?
Hit me.
For every A you give, do you have to give an F?
Somewhere? No. No, I grade on a normal curve.
Okay. I thought you were saying, you said it was like evenly. So I was like, oh my God, did he give out that many Fs? Because I feel like we gave out a lot of A's.
So technically a bell curve, right? Like a normal curve would have like the majority of grades as C's and then there'd be as many A's as F's. But I guess I grade on a slightly weighted curve because I'm not trying to give out straight fails because like there's always redeeming things about a class.
Right.
But okay, I'll tell you right now, I gave out 6 total A's. Uh-huh. I gave out 15 total B's. I gave out 6 total C's, 4 D's, and an F. So generally, everybody got a B. And then some people got A's and some people didn't get that. Like the Houston Texans.
All right, so Houston Texans, you gave them a straight F.
Yes, if you're going to make Davis Mills your first draft pick, right, which was in the third round for them, and then you're going to trade up for Nico Collins, you're not going to get a good grade from me. I was not in on Davis Mills as a player. I would have liked them to trade back and accrue capital because they need capital, but instead they take Davis Mills, and then they have 109, and they have 158, and they package those along with a future fourth to get up to 89 to go get Nico Collins. And I was fine with Nico Collins. I just don't think in a talented wide receiver class, which you expect this year, next year, and every single year, there's a reason to go trading up for a guy in the third round when you have limited capital. So I don't just grade like, I like the player. I also grade about like decision-making and like future stuff acquired. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so for Houston to be using future capital to ensure they get Nico Collins and to be wasting a pick on Davis Mills, to me, is just irresponsible with how little capital they have in the state of that roster. I just want bodies. I'd want rookie contract bodies all over the place. And so they get an F from me. I think Nick Caserio was dealt a shorthand, obviously. He had a tough draw. I don't think this is a condemnation of Caserio at all. I just think that I would have handled it differently if I were in his shoes. And certainly, even with even if I were trading up, those wouldn't have been the players that I targeted.
I gave them a C, but it was mainly because I don't know how much I could have really expected, you know, from the Houston Texans starting this draft in the third round, not even having a first or second round pick. They get Davis Mills because they wanted another quarterback because, I don't know, maybe Deshaun Watson's really never going to play another down for the Houston Texans. And so, like, if that was the case, I guess I understood their desire to get another quarterback in there, but I don't really think Davis Mills is that good, so I couldn't love the draft pick, even if I was okay with them getting the conclusion that they did. Trading up for Nico Collins also wasn't great. Getting Brevin Jordan in the fifth, I thought was good. And Garrett Wallow and Roy Lopez are fine, but overall, I just think it was a super meh draft class. And when I look at this haul of these five players, I'm like, okay, this basically does not help the Texans at all whatsoever. But I also didn't know how to be too hard on them because of what you said. Like, they didn't have any premium right. picks. Now, if I was going to be savage about it and basically looking at the fact that this Texans roster sucks and if Deshaun's not in the picture, you are absolutely gunning for the number one overall pick next year. So if you wanted to get super savage with it, because if you think that Deshaun's not going to play for you again, I'd have just traded back as much as possible to get 2022 capital. Like, I would have sat here with a pick in the early third round this year, and I would have traded it just straight up to somebody next year for a second round pick. I'd have been like, I don't care. Huh? Yeah.
Have you seen the little graphic of all the free agent moves the Texans made this year as Caserio turned over that roster?
No, probably because I don't want to get real sad in the middle of the week because it would probably make me very sad.
They've added 30 free agents, re-signed 9, and traded to acquire 4 players. All right. And that was April 15th. They may have even made another pick or two. I'll read the list extremely fast, and you just stop me when I get to an impact player. You ready?
Okay. All right. I like this exercise.
Tyrod Taylor, Phillip Lindsay, Mark Ingram, Andre Roberts, Chris Conley, Chris Moore, Alex Erickson, Dante Moncrief, Anthony Auclair, Justin Britt, Cole Toner, Lane Taylor, Jason McCray, Malik Collins, Vincent Taylor, Jaleel Johnson, Derek Rivers, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, Jordan Jenkins, Joe Thomas, Christian Kirksey, Tay Davis, Hardy Nickerson, Kamugu J. Hill.
Okay, Hold on. Mark Ingram's okay. Malik Collins is kind of okay.
Yeah, right. Kevin Pierre-Lewis, I like a lot. The rest of that secondary is Terrence Mitchell, Tavier Thomas, Tremont Smith, Desmond King, Terrence Brooks, Cameron Johnston. They've re-signed David Johnson, Dontrell Hilliard, Buddy Howell, Farrell Brown, John Weeks, Roderick Johnson, Vernon Hargraves, Cornell Armstrong, AJ Moore, and they've acquired via trade Ryan Finley, Ryan Izzo, Marcus Cannon, and Shaq Lawson. It is a whole new team, and it's all fringe role players.
Yeah.
It's going to be something else, man. Houston's going to be a very interesting train wreck this year.
Yeah, I'd have been so tempted to just trade everything to 2022. Trade my third round pick for a second round pick next year. Trade that fourth round pick, and instead of moving up from Nico Collins, you're trading it for a third rounder next year or something. And then making a handful of selections. But I mean, you can't do that in all reality. Like, everyone would say, okay, like, if you're going to tank or if you're going to be bad, like, be bad hard. Like, go for the rebuild as much as you can. But you can't do that because you are still a multi-million dollar organization that has to sell tickets and make hype and all this stuff. Like, that still has to happen. So you can't just fully punt a draft, even if I think that would have been the smart thing to do with the Houston Texans, because the draft picks that they could have acquired next year, or the prospects that they could have acquired next year, would be, one, a lot more streamlined to where they'd want to go as an identity in an organization, because let's face it, right now they don't know, because they think they have Deshaun Watson, but they might not have Deshaun Watson. It might look completely different next year. Like you said, they're turning over the roster a lot this offseason, so you don't even know who the major role players are going to be on your team. You don't even really know what the strengths and weaknesses are going to be next year. So this draft class that they were going to have, like, it was always doomed to fail. Like, it was always going to look bad because of the situation that they were in and because of the hand that they were dealt with the lower draft picks that they had to start. So I can totally see why you gave them an F, because I don't think this draft class will impact the Houston Texans at all whatsoever. Like, I think this is just going to be a below average to bad draft class for them. But I also don't know how much better they could have realistically gotten. I don't know. That's where I might have a little bit of sympathy for them.
No, I do. Like I said, I understand he got dealt a tough hand. I just also would not have drafted Davis Mills, right, and I fair. Can't get over that. My five worst classes were Houston, Pittsburgh, Los Angeles Rams, Dallas, Jacksonville. All those guys got a D. Jacksonville got a D+ because I was like, Trevor Lawrence is good.
Did you say Las Vegas?
Las Vegas got C- for me.
Oh wow, I hate
just
it.
Barely missed.
I hated Las Vegas' class.
All right, let's hear it.
This is one of my least favorite classes, and I guess I have to sit here and just admit that I'm not going to see a draft class the way that Mike Mayock and John Gruden do. Like, I've just, that's the way it's going to be. I've got to accept that and just be less shocked about it moving forward, because this is probably the third draft class in a row that I've been like, okay, I don't really know what you're doing here. I mean, look at what the Raiders were able to do. Sure, they get Alex Leatherwood, and even if they thought that Alex Leatherwood was great, that okay, Tevin Jenkins was still on the board. A lot of other offensive tackles were still on the board that even made it to day two that it probably would have selected over Alex Leatherwood, and that yet they were super convinced that they had to draft him at 17. Maybe they did, because we heard that the league kind of likes him and that he's going to be a first-round pick, but I didn't think that was the case at 17. Dismantling your offensive line just to draft offensive line, all right, that's an odd strategy to think of during the offseason actually to make room for. Safeties, they drafted three of them. Like, you had Jeff Heath, who now they no longer have because they released him because they drafted three safeties. They have Carl Joseph. They have Jonathan Abram. And I don't even know if all these guys are going to play. I don't even know if all these guys are going to make the roster. And you're making safety after safety pick all the way into the fourth round. I love Trayvon Merrick. We love Trayvon Merrick on this podcast. I think Trayvon Merrick's going to be good for them because I think he's a good player. But Divine Diablo, okay, I get it. Tyree right. Gillespie, now I don't know what you're doing. Now I have no idea what you're doing. Nate Hobbs in round five after that, I feel like you could have hit corner a lot earlier than this. Malcolm Kuntz, I feel like, was a big overdraft in the third round.
Oh, yes.
You know, and like, I just don't get it. I just don't. Whether it was the players that they actually drafted at the positions that I thought they should draft, whether it was like offensive tackle and edge rusher, I thought Alex Leatherwood and Malcolm Kuntz were very much overdrafted by this team. And then the picks that they surrounded him are three safeties that I don't think that you're going to be able to get out all on the field or maybe even make the damn roster. So for a team in Vegas that's kind of like sitting around 500, they've been around that middle of the road for a while now, I don't think that this draft class made them any better at all. And I don't really right. have high hopes or higher hopes for the Las Vegas Raiders. And it just seems like that's the case every time they come on the clock for draft weekend. And I have to sit here and accept that I'm just never going to see a class the same way the Raiders do.
Yeah. So I largely agree. The Raiders are just in charge, just doing their own thing. By the way, I totally lied. I did give the Raiders a D. I did not give them the C-. I have them incorrectly logged on my sheet.
Wow.
Anyway. If I'm looking at my publish now and I gave them a D, so even if I meant to give them a C-, they got a D on the publish.
Right. The public knows you gave them a D.
The redeeming factor for me is that while drafting three safeties feels like maybe a too many safeties, you can get all three of these guys on the field together realistically, because Merrick can play deep middle, Gillespie can play deep middle, both have enough size to play combo, and then Divine Diablo is basically a linebacker. So it's not like that is a problem. It kind of is. But in end of round three, round four, which is where they drafted Diablo and Gillespie, you're drafting role players anyway. You're drafting sub-package guys. So even though you already have safeties in hand, whatever. It was surprising because I thought they liked John Abram a lot. I have never been the biggest John Abram fan. And so for me, I was like, oh, good. Like, you know what I mean? They need help here. My bigger umbrage is safety is just not important enough to be investing in like this. Like, it's important to have good safeties. It's also important to have good corners. And they've drafted Trayvon Mullen and Damon Arnett in consecutive years top 40. And you could argue they have no good corners. And throw depth there. I don't know how much faith we're putting in Max Crosby and Cleveland Furl and Yannick Ngakoue. Third round pick on edge, Malcolm Kuntz. First, I would have drafted a different edge in round three, but also I probably would have gone earlier at edge. I would have gone interior defensive line as well with the loss of Mo Hurst. My biggest issue is just with the premium position and kind of how they're valuing those, which I don't think the Raiders have ever really paid attention to. The other thing is, and this is very funny because everybody and their mama who listens to the podcast will know that I'm not the biggest Alex Leatherwood fan, by the end of the cycle, I really kind of came around on Alex Leatherwood. You know what I mean? It's kind of like you don't have to be first. You just have to be right by the end. I wouldn't have taken him 17. But I do think, especially with some of the explosiveness that he measured in as and the way that he played at the end of the season there, that final season for Alabama, I can get it with him at tackle as a mid-level player, as just a totally acceptable starter. I do think that he's got a nice projection to guard, which the Raiders obviously need tackle, but they also do need guard because they moved on from Gabe Jackson this past year as well. And
look,
so
I totally hear you on the guard versatility thing, but that also, like, pick a freaking tackle at 17. You know, like, right. don't give me this, oh, well, at worst, he's a guard bullcrap. Make the right pick at 17.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, it's very funny to me because by the end of the process, I was kind of like, oh, I did that, but
I thought Alex Leatherwood would be a really nice early second round offensive tackle right. to take. That's what right. I thought. 17? Rich, especially if you're going to sit here and say, well, at worst, he's a guard. Dude, what? Don't give me that.
No, I hear you. I do. I mean, I give him a D. Not a C-. So there you go.
All right, great. What's the next team?
Do you want to talk about the team that made absolutely the worst reaches all draft?
Yes, I do.
Los Angeles Rams?
Brother.
When Ernest Jones went off the board, you were hosting on day two. When Ernest Jones, linebacker out of South Carolina, went off the board in round three, did you have a panic moment where you were like, I don't even know how to throw this player to the scouts because I have never heard of him in my life?
Yeah, basically.
Yes. Because we had heard, like, I think he, like, randomly showed up on a Kuiper mock at some point. We were all like, what the frick? And then that was it.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, can you do this? So Tutu Atwell in round two, Ernest Jones in round three. Even Bobby Brown and Robert Rochelle in rounds four, both round four picks. Jacob Harris out of UCF as well, you can throw in there. All these are players who actually got some run during the process, but they weren't expected to be round four. Maybe Bobby Brown. Rochelle had good testing, but Central Arkansas guy, didn't really have a standout Senior Bowl, which you'd like to see from your lower level players. Jacob Harris is a soccer player who changed over to football during high school, and so okay, you got a nice developmental arc, whatever, but like round four was on the high end for all three of those players. I was asked on the Northwestern podcast if I thought Ernest Brown was going to get drafted, and I said maybe barely. He goes round five, and then they made round seven picks. It's like, all right, I'm not going to take too much umbrage with going and getting your guys on day three, but man, Tutu Atwell, Ernest Jones as an opening for a draft is just
I can't get over the 2-2 pick, man. I know we talked about this on Monday, but I cannot get over it.
Yeah.
Have you seen the recent
argument?
No, please tell me. Please, I'm dying. I will. Everybody out there, if you hear any defense argument of 2-2 Atwell, please send it my way. I have to hear it. Rams, to absolutely hear it.
Rams Twitter is trying to figure out where he's going to play. And somebody mentioned, like, he's going to play, like, their Z role, right? He's going to play that slot role, like, off line of scrimmage, and that way he won't get banged up against press. The problem is that if you play that role for the Rams, you have to be able to block. Because that's Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. They put him in motion. They put him in sift motion on split zone, right? And so they've got to come across the formation, seal out an unblocked end. It's 2-2 Atwell. He can't. He's not big enough. So you have to be able to block if you play that role, and he simply cannot do it. He's, you know, my theory, and I was talking with Nate Tice of The Athletic about this, is that he's going to play the on the line of scrimmage X receiver role because that's what Brandon Cooks played. And remember, they have DeSean Jackson. He's probably going to play that as well, which means in bunch sets, he's going to be on the line of scrimmage. Got to get off press. That's never done it before. So I don't even know how they get him on the field. I don't even know how it makes sense for them getting to get him the ball without being hit. I don't know what the plan is.
I just couldn't believe it because this is their deepest position, right? Like of all the things that I feel like the Rams need to continue to like get over the top, I didn't think that wide receiver was something that was desperately a big need for them.
Right,
like
I would have told you their biggest need on offense was offensive line, and they did not pick an offensive line.
Not a single one. Right? I mean, like, they have Cooper Kupp, they have Van Jefferson, they have Robert Woods, they added DeSean Jackson, who they hope can, like, give them that vertical deep threat. Where, like, what is Tutu doing? What is Tutu playing for you? How big of an emphasis does this guy give you? You just traded for Matthew freaking Stafford. You don't have first round picks. You don't. This is not a situation where you're sitting here going, okay, you know what? This year we don't have a first round pick. We're going after a guy that we really like, a guy that we're going to invest in at the wide receiver group, and he's going to be great for us down the road. We'll address the trenches with our premium picks in a couple of years. They don't have any. They don't have any. How do you get to this point thinking that Tutu Atwell is the correct choice? They've got needs on the defensive line. They've got needs on the offensive line. They have to, they've got needs at like coverage linebacker. Like, there are much higher value positions that the Rams have to hit. And if this is a sign of how they are going to evaluate their positions and the positions of importance moving forward without any first round picks, you guys are screwed. I believe in Sean McVay because I think he's a fantastic head coach. And now that he has Matthew Stafford with him, I think that is going to absolve a lot of sins that they make with team building over the next couple of years. And so they could be okay. But when it comes to the Rams getting where they want to go, getting back the return or getting back the price of trading for Matthew Stafford to open up a winning window, not just to be good, but to win Super Bowls, this is not how you do it. That is not how you do it, drafting Tutu Atwell with your first selection in the second round.
God, I don't hope. I hope Tutu Atwell is good for his sake.
Of course. I hope he roasts the crap out of us while he scores a touchdown.
I would not go so far as to say I hope he's good just because it would be funny, but I also kind of do hope he's good because it would be funny.
I mean, that would... Yep. That'd sure show us, wouldn't it? All right, draft fans, listen up. Nugenix is the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC, and they're offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT, that's DRAFT, to 231231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testosterone, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels to increase energy and give you some lean muscle mass. Plus, text now and they'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, which is their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back in shape absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231231. That's DRAFT to 231231. Message and data rates may apply. Also, this episode is brought to you by 1010. A capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designer rings at a fantastic price point. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative style diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings that are sure to bring joy to anyone's life. This collection features high quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight at fairly priced points. So you can give that special someone something truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect engagement ring that your significant other will treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. It won't be around for long, so find them by searching the words 10x10 over at BlueNile.com. Can we talk about the Dallas Cowboys?
Sure.
What grade did you give the Cowboys?
Going into my sheet, D. Let's double check my publish, because apparently we can't trust that. I gave them a D.
I also gave them a D. This is one of the lowest grades that I gave, and it's. I didn't think that this would be the case because there's a couple of picks that I really like. Michael Parsons is a top 10 player in this class for me, offense and defense. I love them. I can see the ceiling with Kelvin Joseph. Okay, cool. Jabril Cox in the fourth round. I think that that was a really good pick. I think that that was one of the quote unquote steals of day three, if you will. But for the Cowboys, how it all shaped up? Nah. I do not understand how the Cowboys got much better, okay? You start at the top. Mm-hmm. I think the Micah Parsons pick was a panic pick. I truly do. Because I think the Cowboys ran...
I'm just thinking of the screen cap of just the one person in the Cowboys war room after the corners went off the board.
Listen, and that's what I think happened. I think that the Cowboys ran thousands of draft simulations, and in most of them, they had their pick between J.C. Horn and Patrick Surtain. And I would say a lot of them, they had their pick of either of them. Like, both of them were still on the board. And here it is in reality. They're sitting at number 10. Both these guys go 8 and 9, respectively. I think the Cowboys big panic. Because here is an element that I thought of after the fact, after I was even not liking the Cowboys draft on the surface level. they traded with the Philadelphia Eagles with Justin Fields still on the board. So, like, maybe you think, okay, we don't think the Philadelphia Eagles are going to take Justin Fields, but you never know for sure. They traded that pick to the Eagles for the chance for them to move up to potentially get their franchise quarterback, who might be incredible for them, who might rule the division for years and years and years. And they thought that that was an okay move, simply to move back to buy them extra time so they could pick a linebacker. I understand. We talked about this on Monday, I believe. Leighton Vander Esch didn't pick up his fifth-year option. Jalen Smith, not what you wanted him to be after the rookie contract. Sean Lee retires. Not the rookie contract for Jalen Smith. The second-year contract. Sean Lee retires. Still, how much better are the Cowboys after this? You look at the Kelvin Joseph pick. Okay. High-ceiling corner. What's the thing that he struggles with? Experience and consistency. What does Trayvon Diggs struggle with? Experience and consistency. What, you're not going to have two outside corners that struggle with consistency? There's one week you might give up 40. I don't care if Dak Prescott's there. You might not be outscoring that with all the offensive weapons that they have on that team. So I don't know how much better Kelvin Joseph makes this team, especially in the short term. The two defensive linemen, okay, they don't really move the needle for me. You pick Nashawn Wright in the third round when you could have picked him in the seventh round? What are you doing? I just felt like the Cowboys, from the moment Patrick Surtain went off the board at number 9, panicked. Never recovered. Just started picking names that, sure, maybe filled the positional needs that they had in categories, but don't exactly, to me, fit what the Cowboys were able to do. I'm big shaky on this draft. I thought that there was a lot of panic in the room after those first two corners went off, and I don't see how you could say the Dallas Cowboys are a lot better today than they were before the draft began.
Yeah, that's my big thing. It's like, last year the Cowboys were going to give up 35 points, and hopefully Dak Prescott and the offense can get us 38. And now the Cowboys are, you know, we're going to give up 32 points, and hopefully Dak Prescott can get us 35. But, like, because they made a lot of picks on defense, but they're trying to kind of reshape this defense into the Dan Quinn mold, right? And what's really, I think, funny about this is if you widen the scope to a couple of years, they have to take Kelvin Joseph in the second round and Nashawn Wright in the third round. Why? Because they got no corners. You know who they used to have? Byron Jones.
Right.
You know what would have been perfect for a Dan Quinn cover three defense?
Probably Byron Jones.
Right. Which, like, you know, Chris Richard was there, obviously, and they ran a similar approach, and Jones got a huge contract off of how he grew in that approach. Now, they spent a first-round pick on Michael Parsons, top 12 pick, top 15 pick. You know who else they've got on the roster? Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, top 40 picks at linebacker. You would think that they would see this and go, all right, we spent early picks at linebacker in the past. Defense sucked for the last few years. Maybe an early pick at linebacker is not going to solve our problem. Make the pick anyway.
Yeah.
You know what? We've never had a good edge rusher opposite DeMarcus Lawrence. We've never had the ability to have a second guy coming off the edge. You know what we should do? Add two big five techniques. Osadigizua and Charles Golston. What I like to say is, like, if Dan Quinn needs a Michael Bennett, which is what they're trying to get there, a Michael Bennett to make his defense work, it's not a very good defense. Because it's not very many Michael Bennetts. You know what I mean? Like,
I would argue there's basically only one Michael Bennett.
Yeah. So they're chasing smoke. They're just barking up the wrong tree, trying to find something that they're not going to be able to get with Dan Quinn with this defense. So I think in 2 years, we're going to see them exactly where they were 2 years ago, which is they might have one or two really good players on defense. They might have a good guy in a young contract, but they're not going to have a good defense altogether. And they're not going to be able to, from a coordinator perspective, Quinn's not going to be able to muster it up and to fill in the gaps. He wasn't able to do it in Atlanta, and this style of defense is going out of vogue anyway. So I think the Cowboys made tons of changes on defense in terms of coordinator and investments and whatever, and are pretty much exactly where they've always been. And yep, that's really disappointing for such a heavy draft class. Made 10 picks, made 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, and it doesn't feel like they got much better. Just hate to see it.
I agree with you. What's another team? I think you had 3 left on your list that we have not touched on.
So I gave the Indianapolis Colts a D, which...
What did I give the Colts? I didn't think I gave them that low of a grade.
Right. So people, like, you know, okay, Chris Ballard's the man. He's never done anything wrong ever. He's the greatest GM alive. All right. he didn't take a tackle, which is... Or he took Will Fries in the 7th round, which is... Will Fries is probably a guard.
Yeah, how dare you?
Okay, he didn't take a tackle. I don't really understand what the Colts have done since January. Phillip Rivers retires. Let's trade for Carson Wentz. As I've talked about in this podcast before, I think that ideally Carson Wentz, in terms of quality play, gives you pretty much what you got from Phillip Rivers last year. So now you're back to where you were. You bring back Xavier Rhodes on a one-year contract. You bring back T.Y. Hilton on a one-year contract. All right. You lost Justin Houston. So let's go and bring Kwity Paye and Deo Dyangbo. Neither of them are like outside rushers, right? They're like hand in the dirt, you know, outside inside guys. Not really like high side outside track speed rushers. So you still need Ben Bandigo and Kamoko Touré to be healthy and do good work. Both Paye and Odiangbo are likable players. Paye is not a high sack artist dude, and Odiangbo is coming off an Achilles injury. So neither one of those guys to me are clear bets to improve your pass rush. So I'm not sure if the pass rush got better. With the additions of Paye and Odiangbo and the loss of Justin Houston, I'm not sold that the pass rush actually got better. Now, you made back-to-back edge picks, and you got to hope that those guys come back and are healthy and are effective. You didn't make the tackle pick, and then you come in the fourth round, and you grab Kyle Granson. Okay, so now we got Jack Doyle and Mo Alie-Cox and Kyle Granson. So now we can run our 13 personnel sets. Sick. Didn't really love Kyle Granson as a prospect. Did not see him as a fourth-round prospect. Kylan Granson. I keep saying his name wrong. Kylan Granson. Didn't think Sean Davis was draftable out of Florida. Didn't think Sam Ellinger was draftable out of Texas. Then Michael Strachan is great height, weight, speed guy who does not play football yet. The Colts, to me, have gotten, if anything, back to exactly where they were last season, which is able to win the division and then leave the AFC playoffs in the first round. It's like the Cowboys. I look at this class and I say, all right, same problems as before, same issues as a team. Why didn't we finish shoring up the offensive line? Why didn't we take two picks on the offensive line and be able to really run the football with Jonathan Taylor? Why did we bring in Kylan Granson, who is not a blocking tight end, who is a move H-back tight end, if we're going to be a run-first offense? Okay, we're going to be a pass-first offense. Then where's the continued investment in wide receiver? Because Paris Campbell ain't it. T.Y.'s coming back on a one-year deal. T.Y.'s not trusted worthy to be healthy. We putting all our eggs in the Michael Pittman basket? When you have a quarterback like Carson Wentz, you have to be able to protect him. And to not take tackle, he's going to take sacks. He's going to give up the football. It's going to be the exact same issues in Philadelphia. On the defensive side of the ball, these body types, these players, Paye and Odiangbo, do not replace Houston. They add to what you already have in hand. So you're going to play Paye, Tyquan Lewis, DeForest Buckner, Grover Smith. And you're going to be twisting stunts the whole time. Remember how little pressure this team was able to get on Josh Allen? Right? You're going to have to start zone blitzing, right? You're going to have to start sending extra guys. And you didn't add to your coverage men. You didn't add a corner. You had Xavier Rhodes for one more year. And Rocky Sin's going to start on the outside. And he was a problem. The team's going to have the exact same problems it did last year. After a whole free agency cycle in which they should have controlled free agency, they had tons of money, and then a draft cycle in which they had first and a second round pick. So, the Colts are treading water, and I don't get it because I don't think they're one of the four best teams in the AFC. So why are you treading water on the fringe? You should be treading water if you're at the top. I don't understand it.
I wasn't as low as you on with the Colts draft, but I definitely can hear you, you know, listening to you talk about how important offensive line needed to be, and we mocked an offensive lineman to them often in the first round, and Kwity Paye falls to them, and I would have told you that they were going to absolutely love Kwity Paye if he somehow got to 21, and he does, and so I understand why that's the pick there. I'm not exactly shocked about it, and perhaps me giving them a favorable grade was more of me saying, like, yeah, of course they like Kwity Paye. Like, this is always going to be the selection, but should it have been the selection? Okay, maybe that's another discussion, because no, there's no doubt about it that you need to make sure that the offensive line is as good as it needs to be. I think they got some good players, but I can definitely hear you on the argument of, was it the right players? So maybe that's just a little bit of a different back and forth that we got there.
Right. Before, I think that
Odiangbo
and I think Odiangbo and Paye can make their twist and stunt game really, really good. I do. I just don't think that translates in January. You need guys to win one-on-one reps. Mm. I don't think they have that player. Mm. I'd love for it to be Ben Bandigo or Kamoko Touré. I just don't trust their health.
Right. That makes sense. All right, we got two more teams, I believe, that we want to talk about, of drafts that we didn't really understand. But before we get there, I got to remind you guys about Bet Online, the fast and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. This week has tons of action on the list. We got NHL. We got MLB. We got NBA. Even all your favorite UFC and MMA action, you can get on that as well. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as the teams prep for their playoff runs, as well as the regular season getting underway in some of the sports. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit that you make using the promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, LOCKEDON. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. And then, folks, if you have not ordered these yet, you need to get on it. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bars on the planet. They got 18 incredible different flavors, low in calories, low in sugars, and yet high in protein, high in fiber. That's what you're going for. That's what you're trying to put in your diet at all times. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED and then 1-5 to get 15% off of your first order. Use the promo code LOCKED15, 50% off over on the BuiltBar.com. Best tasting protein bars you will ever find. Pittsburgh Steelers are the last team that I want to bring up. And as the Steelers draft was going on, especially through the first 2 days of the draft, we were a little shocked at what was going on. And Dre Harris, who's one of the scouts that we have on staff over at the Draft Network, he said, hey, you know what? Mike Tomlin has earned the right for us to at least let it play out with him before we really criticize him. And you know what? He is right. But when I look at this...
Why are we talking about Tomlin, not Colbert here?
Well, I think he's...
Colbert's had a job for forever, so I get it, but...
Yeah, but, like, Tom was probably fully in on the draft room as well, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, they're probably very intertwined at this point, so he's probably very in tune with the coach. Yeah, but you're right, Kevin Colbert's in it as well. Pittsburgh Steelers draft, you go, Najee Harris. Okay, great. Didn't have a running back. Objectively, get to replace James Conner with a really good back, RB1 in this class. Cool, good stuff. Pat Freiermuth. All right, they didn't have a tight end option. I guess he probably reminds him of Heath Miller from the glory days. Okay, cool, got that. And then they get Kendrick Green and Dan Moore Jr., who, all right, good offensive lineman. But was this the order that this needed to happen? I feel like that's the part that was different. Ben talks about valuation all the time. When you look at certain picks and how high they are in the draft, the premium positions that you often go after, if you have holes in the offensive line, if you have holes at edge rusher, at quarterback, at lockdown corner, then these are the things you often need to prioritize because the best players often go off the board early. You don't want to just leave it to chance all the time and finding these late round gems. You want to make sure that you're navigating the draft correctly and with the right value, if you will. And it just feels like the Steelers didn't do that. In a vacuum, I think they had a lot of their needs, but, well, it's not a corner because they didn't draft a single corner, and I think that they do have a corner need. But even their offensive line needs, it's like, okay, you get away from the draft and they add an offensive tackle and they add an interior offensive lineman after losing a center and their starting left tackle. But they didn't do it in the order that I thought would have been most advantageous to them. I feel like they would have been able to get a tight end and a running back some point in the draft. And even if that's not the case, I don't know how much Pat Freiermuth is really giving back to them. So the Steelers got a low grade for me. They didn't get a D, but I just felt like the way they approached it and the valuation that they carried with the higher premium picks was off, in my opinion. And they also drafted Isaiah Loudermilk, who they drafted him in the third round. The fifth round. And Kyle...
It's like the third round, but different.
Yeah, right. It's like the third round, but two rounds after that. See what that is, right?
Yeah, I'm there.
The third round, but then you fast forward one round. And then one more time. Yeah. I'm with you.
Okay,
so that gets us into the fifth round. Isaiah Loudermilk, who's a defensive tackle from Wisconsin, he got picked, I don't know, it was like 150-something. It was like right around 150. And Kyle told us live on air that Isaiah Loudermilk was ranked 368th, I think, on TDN's big board.
So that
is a negative value of over 200 points.
I will say, like, the Steelers have historically been pretty good with defensive linemen. There's nothing worse than when you rank a guy really lowly, and then he goes to a team that's usually very good at drafting that position. You're just like,
oh no. So, yeah, I didn't really love the Steelers draft. It makes sense because I think that the Steelers believe they're closer to winning than they actually are. So maybe, you know, they sit here and they go, hey, we're running back away from really competing, or we're running back at a tight end away from really competing. And that might be why they went with this. You know, they're bringing back Ben Roethlisberger. They're bringing back a handful of other guys. They've still got a really stout defense. perhaps they really do think that they're close. And if they think they're close, then that justifies making the picks they made. But
right.
I don't think they're close. Yeah.
I definitely get we have to win with Roethlisberger. Let's get a running game. Let's get a good running back. Let's get a good pass catching tight end. How many targets do we think Pat Freiermuth gets? Remembering that this team, this upcoming season, has Juju, James Washington, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson. How many targets is at best the fourth option in that receiving group?
Seven.
Nine. I don't know how much value you're getting out of him. I think Najee's going to be a pretty heavy usage. He's going to be a bell cow sort of a dude. But even then, obviously, the concerns with the offensive line and the neglect there is the same as with the Colts. They get Kendrick Green and Dan Moore. Both of them are zone blocking players. I have a sneaking suspicion the Steelers are going to try to run some more zone this year. And by sneaking, I mean there's absolutely no way they're not, given the players that they drafted. But yeah, to me, that Steelers draft was expected to be a little bit unintelligible. Steelers drafts usually are. This one was no exception. Steelers, I gave a D. Raiders, Rams, Jaguars, who we haven't talked about. Travis Etienne's overdrafted. Tyson Campbell, I kind of get it, but was overdrafted. Walker Little's absurdly overdrafted.
Yeah.
It's a very high ceiling draft. It's a ton of five stars. You know what I mean? Urban Meyer literally drafted as if he was recruiting. It's like, let's get the players that were ranked really highly by the recruiting services. Like, Urban, there's been 4 years of football. Like, you can look at that too. But Travis Etienne, Tyson Campbell, Walker Little, all these guys are five stars.
Yeah.
People have asked, how are you going to figure out the Campbell, CJ Henderson, Shaquille Griffin thing, because there's only two outside corner spots and all three of those guys are outside. Campbell's going to fight CJ Henderson for that job. And when Henderson was drafted by last tenure, he was drafted by last front office, by last coaching staff. And so the new coaching staff comes in, the new front office comes in, and clearly off their internal evaluations, we saw them pick Etienne despite the fact that they have James Robinson. It's because they don't think Robinson's going to be fast enough to do what they ask of their running back. And clearly at outside corner, they're not sold that CJ Henderson is going to be able to do what Tyson Campbell can potentially bring. What that exact defining trait is a little bit less clear, but Campbell's going to fight CJ Henderson for that job. This front office has brought in Shaquille Griffin in free agency and now drafted Campbell. It's very clear to me that they don't have faith in CJ Henderson in that role. So Campbell, get it, premium position, whatever. The Walker Little pick is absurd. Little hasn't been healthy in a long time, hasn't played good ball in a long time.
Right.
And then Andre Sisco, who we love in round three, fine with it. JT Feli, who we like in round four, fine with it. Nothing wrong with their day three. But to make as aggressive early overdrafts as they did, we got to remember, Lawrence, Etienne, Campbell, Little doesn't sound that bad until you remember that's two first round picks and two second round picks. That's not 1-2-3-4. That's 1-1-2-2. That is irresponsible drafting. That is coach at the helm drafting. That is, I remember watching this guy as a recruit and he looked great drafting.
Mm-hmm.
So Urban's running it like he would run a college team.
Right.
And we know how that usually goes. Even if it's successful early in the first year, it usually flames out. So I've been kind of bearish on the Urban Meyer tenure in Jacksonville since the jump, and this draft certainly did nothing to assuage my concerns.
Yeah, it feels very Urban Meyer-esque. Like you said, these are high-priced recruits. Trevor Lawrence, five-star. Travis Etienne, 4/5-star. Tyson Campbell, 5-star. Walker Little, 5-star. And so they just went after 5-star players. I mean, they brought in Dylan Moses after the draft, former 5-star. You know, it's like they're clearly prioritizing these guys. I really did like the Sisco and Tufele picks, and when it comes to the depth, it's like, all right, that makes sense. Walker Little one doesn't make any sense in the world to me. The Tyson Campbell one, like you said, I guess they don't believe in CJ Henderson, but there's a big difference, right? And it's hard to say those two things in adjoining sentences like you did, where it's like, okay, they drafted CJ Henderson last year and they drafted a replacement for him. They also got James Robinson last year and they're drafting his replacement. Well, one of these guys was picked number 9 overall. The other one was picked. He wasn't. That's the big difference for me. Them replacing, or them bringing in competition, investing a high pick to bring a running back in to hopefully take over for an undrafted free agent. I mean, that's nothing new. We saw that with Phillip Lindsay, with the Denver Broncos. It's like Phillip Lindsay rushed for 1,000 yards, and then he just continued to produce and play really well. And they were like, yeah, but we're going to keep trying to bring in running backs that are better than you. And that's just the way that it was going to go. And I knew that would be the case with Robinson. I didn't think that they were going to draft a running back round one, but it does make sense there because of him being an undrafted free agent kind of a guy. The Tyson Campbell one, a little bit different from me. I honestly think that he just wants to have Urban Meyer, that is, he just wants to have corners that he can play and lean on at any point in time. Like, he does not want talent at corner to be an excuse. But I think a big difference for Urban Meyer now in the NFL than what he had at college football is the roster's a lot smaller. So when he was recruiting at Ohio State and at Florida, he could have all of these really talented corners on his roster that he could go to no matter what. How many corners are you drafting on, or how many corners are you dressing on draft day? I think that that now, of course, goes into it because also you got to remember, these guys have to play special teams. Like, and you, it's not like you have this army of underclassmen, freshmen, and sophomores that are playing a lot of special teams for you. The roster being way smaller, I think, is going to be a different adjustment to Urban Meyer, who probably really just loved having a ton of talented corners at Ohio State. And he was like, hey, one of the things I love is that we had a super deep room with really talented corners. It's like, okay, I agree. That's good. Coverage impact matters a lot. But you've also got to find a home for these guys who could also potentially play special teams if they're CB3, 4, 5 for you, however many you're dressing on game day. So I think that we're in the midst of a big learning year, probably big learning 2 years for Urban Meyer. And he's drafting talented players, so I think that it could certainly still work out for him. But he will need to get a little bit more experience in the kind of guys that you want to be drafting, because this draft felt very Urban Meyer, the college coach-esque. Will that be the same guy who's drafting in 3 years? We will see. I think it's got to be a little bit of an adjustment for him.
Yes. My number one response to that is, like, full agree. It's just, It always worries me with college coaches in general. It especially worries me with a coach like Urban Meyer.
Yep. Yep, especially from a guy that had a lot of control over his college football program. And it doesn't.
Don't want to, yeah. We'll just it's going to be okay, Jags fans. You have Trevor Lawrence. Hey,
you got
it.
Trevor Lawrence. Yay.
We'll see you guys in 2 years.
I wasn't as low in the Jaguars class. So if you have any hate mail, please send it to @BenjaminSolak on Twitter. There we go. Those are our least favorite draft classes. We went through the best on yesterday's episode of the podcast. For tomorrow's episode, we're going to be going over our individual favorite fits, prospects going to certain teams, things we're really excited about certain players. And also, we're going to be talking about rookie of the year odds and some odds for who's going to perform the best at each position for the rookie class coming up this 2021 season. We also, of course, have Fan Fridays returning at the end of the week. I said this at the beginning. This better break the record, folks. We better get the most questions we've ever had, and we're going to answer as many as possible. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.